Hello and happy Tuesday. This is Nancy reading to you today from your Providence Journal. It is August 18th, 2026. Our cover story is out of North Kingstown, Too Much to Bear. The Department of Environmental Management has fined a new asphalt plant in the Quonset Business Park $8,500 and ordered it to come up with an odor mitigation plan within 60 days. The administrative action comes in response to people living within a five-mile radius of the plant filing dozens of complaints with DEM, saying eye-watering odors that began in December have returned with a vengeance as spring has turned into the stifling dog days of summer. "The smell was so bad one morning I had everyone in the neighborhood texting me," said Vanessa Mascaro, who lives less than a mile north of the plant. "It woke everyone up. It infiltrated the house because you have the windows open." Described as an asphalt transloading facility, the operation is owned by the Canadian-based company Bituma and managed by Ponderosa Solutions, headquartered in Sapulpa, Oklahoma. On Wednesday, the DEM sent Bituma a 9-page notice of violation, pinning the odors that violate state air quality standards on the plant. DEM levied an $8,500 fine, classifying it as a major violation that carries a $10,000 maximum penalty. According to the notice, DEM said it received 168 complaints of strong asphalt fumes between March 26 and July 15th. It dispatched and investigated to the area early on July 8th. The objectionable odors were observed during the time periods of 5:35 to 5:48 a.m. and 6:44 to 6:50 during the inspection, the notice said, and the odors were so strong that it caused the inspector to feel nauseous, cough, and return to the car to avoid odors. The state is giving Bituma 60 days to devise an odor mitigation plan. DEM also found in its investigation that the Rhode Island Secretary of State's office revoked Bituma's organization/registration on December 30, 2020. The company had been in compliance from 2013 until the lapse 6 years ago. After learning about the state's notice of violation on Thursday morning, Quonset Development Corporation CEO Stephen J. King told the Hummel Report, "Bituma's licensing agreement in West Davisville clearly requires the company to be in compliance with all state laws and regulations. If the company fails to meet this standard, they have 10 days to do so before triggering the noncompliance provisions of the license with QDC. DEM's notice of violation provides the first actionable finding regarding the Bituma facility," King added. Upon receipt of a copy of the NOV from the DEM, Quonset will immediately demand Bituma comply with state regulations within 10 days of receipt of QDC's letter. The Hummel Report first reported on the odors in an investigation published in February in the Providence Journal. Mascaro and her neighbor, Alyssa Knapp, told us the pungent odors began shortly after Bituma began operations late in the fall of 2025, then subsided when the plant closed for the winter. But the last few months have brought strong southern winds that have carried fumes, the state has still not determined the source, to homes miles from the plant. Heather and Josh Olson, who live half a mile north of the new plant, said the fumes have ruined their quality of life. "It's pure chemicals. I have asthma. It's so strong that it takes my breath away. It's awful," said Heather Olson, who has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and has lived with her husband in their home north of Bituma since 2001. "We have a huge porch that runs the whole length of our house, and we enjoy spending time outside. Our kids come here to spend time. We have a pool in our yard. And we're unable to do that a lot of times because of the smell and how awful it is," Olson said. A lawyer for Bituma questioned whether the smells are coming from another asphalt plant half a mile east of its plant or some paving of nearby local roads. The Olsons say they don't need analysis to know where the odors are coming from. 100% is coming from Bituma, said Heather Olson, noting that the other plant in Quonset has been operating since 2017 and caused no problems, and nearby pavings finished long ago. The 2017 Hummel report chronicled Thomas Miozzi moving his asphalt plant, located adjacent to the residential neighborhood in Coventry, 15 miles south of the Quonset Business Park. That allowed him to operate 24 hours a day away from homes. Miozzi sold the plant 3 years ago to Peckham Industries. 4 a.m. you get the smell and it lasts until about 8, said Josh Olson. Sometimes you go out at night, 10:30, 11, and the smell is still there. You can't keep your windows open when it's nice outside because you never know if the fumes and smell are going to be in your house. In response to the complaints, the Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management set up an online complaint portal and has received dozens of submissions since the spring. DEM Director Terrence Gray wrote North Kingstown Town Manager Ralph Mollis on July 2nd, saying the department is conducting regular unannounced trips through the impacted neighborhood as well as in and around the Davisville Industrial Complex to investigate and directly document any odors experienced. Gray says the visits would be conducted outside normal business hours and as early as 4:05 a.m. when residents say the odors have been the strongest. On Friday morning in July, between 7:30 and 8 a.m., the Hummel Report observed a DEM employee walking the perimeter of the Bituma plant on Compass Circle with a clipboard taking notes, then later parking outside Miozzi's plant down the road. The complaints from the online portal have been pointed. Donna Brown wrote on June 23rd, I went out this morning at 6 a.m. to take my dog for a walk. Had to come home since the smell was unbearable. This has to stop. This is unacceptable. We can't afford to move. This is happening way too often and interrupts my husband and my sleep all the time. What is this doing to our health? Another resident, Uki Kwan, wrote on June 22nd, although we experience the smell frequently, I do not send an email every time. However, this morning was so exceptionally terrible, I felt compelled to write. The intense smell of hot asphalt was so overpowering that I woke up with a severe headache and intense nausea. What can be done? Although North Kingstown has no direct oversight, since the Quonset Development Corp is a quasi-public state agency covering a 3,200-acre park, complaints have flooded Town Hall. Town Manager Ralph Mollis said is scheduled to meet August 18th with representatives from Bituma, two North Kingstown City Council members, and the town's legal counsel, and has invited the QDC's King to attend as well. Mollis said the only contact he's had with Bituma so far has been through Providence Attorney Jennifer Cervenka, a former chairwoman of the Rhode Island Coastal Resources Management Council. Cervenka wrote that the town on June 4th and again July 1st, saying the company had implemented an odor control management plan. Bituma has elected to purchase certain engineered vapor control equipment for installation at select portions of the facility. The Hummel Report spoke with an asphalt industry expert who said one option that Bituma has is to install a blue smoke capture system that looks like a car wash and would enclose the liquid asphalt being transferred into waiting trucks. We observed and smelled vapors the morning of July 24th during the transfer process. The liquid asphalt, which is heated to about 300 degrees, is transported by tanker to a hot mix plant where sand and stone are added before the mix is ready to be sent out to paving crews. In response to an email, Bitumar responded with a written statement. We appreciate your interest. However, we will not be providing interviews or substantive comment at this time. We are actively engaged in discussions with several different authorities. We believe it is important to respect the process and will comment when appropriate. This is not the only complaint the Quonset Development Corp has gotten this year. Shortly after the asphalt issue became public, residents learned about a proposed sewage sludge processing facility in the park and another large-scale plant that would store lithium-ion batteries. Residents, with the support of local and state politicians, successfully killed, for now, the sludge facility, and signs have popped up in various neighborhoods opposing the three projects. Heather Olson took exception to Governor Dan McKee coming to the town council meeting to oppose the sludge plant. She said the governor showed up for the last 10 minutes of the meeting and said he was going to stop it. McKee can't answer one question, Olson said. He said, well, up in Cumberland. Well, I don't care about Cumberland. We live in North Kingstown. She also wants to know why representatives from Bitumar and Quonset Development Corp never attend council meetings. Quonset Development Corp does so much sneaky stuff, she said. They change meeting dates when they know people are going to come and question them. They won't show up and answer questions. The Hummel Report discovered during its reporting earlier this year that Bitumar wanted to locate the asphalt plant near the water, but Quonset did not have the infrastructure. Residents questioned why Quonset Development Corp would allow it to be located so close to a neighborhood. I can't believe that it's got as far as it did without us knowing, Heather Olson said, because if I had any indication that what they were going to put it over there where they did, we would have said something a long time ago. Mollis is trying to strike a balance between being responsive to his constituents and keeping good relations with the Quonset Development Corporation, which brings a boost to the local economy and, up until recently, has mostly good relations with the neighbors. We can't judge an entity like QDC based on their last mistake, Mollis said. They have given a lot to Rhode Island and North Kingstown. Tax revenue, good businesses, and good employees. They have been good neighbors for a long, long time. At the same time, I think these last few projects have been questionable. What we question is this really the type of projects we want in Quonset? Mollis added. Alice Knapp said she knows people who are at their breaking point. Some are thinking of relocating, she said. It's really, really sad. I hate to say we're in that camp. To be honest, we're very concerned about where we're going to go and if we have to deal with the same issues in another town. We don't want to downgrade. We've poured everything into this house for the last 11 years. We don't want to sell and move into something worse or smaller, Knapp said. Heather Olson agreed, saying she's been fighting cancer for 3 years. People say, sell your house. Why should I have to sell my house when I've lived here for 24 years? I'm perfectly happy with my house. We weren't ever notified this was happening. It was all brushed under the rug. King from QDC said, and as it has for decades, Quonset will continue to be vigilant in working with state officials to ensure that all regulations are followed. While Quonset is the state's leading economic engine, it will also continue to act in a way that ensures that the broader public good is served. Our next cover story is by Wheeler Cooperwaith, Income Trail Cost of Rhode Island Housing. Before the pandemic, most people worked in an office. Traffic was predictable and the median price of a house was only slowly climbing. At around $250,000, it was still cheap enough for most families to buy. At the end of 2019, the median price was $285,000. At the time, it was the highest ever, representing a 5.6% jump from the prior year, outpacing inflation, but well below the S&P 500's 16% gains that year. The number of single-family houses listed for sale, 3,600 during that summer, was considered healthy. Then the pandemic started. People pulled their houses off the market. Interest rates cratered. Those then rose to heights not seen in decades, and prices went up and up and are still going up. In June of 2026, the median price of a single-family home hit a new record high, $550,000. Put into context, that's an 84% increase since June of 2019. And rent is much more expensive now, too, with one report putting the cost for a market two-bedroom apartment at $1,765. Meanwhile, Rhode Island's median income hasn't kept pace with the rapid increase. State elected officials and seemingly the public agree Rhode Island is in a housing crisis. Now that the median housing price is consistently above $500,000, would-be sellers want top dollar because they see other houses selling for that much and because they need the proceeds from a house sale to secure their new home. But buyers, confronted with the higher costs themselves, are getting pickier about price, even if it's what an appraiser says the house is worth. Why stretch a budget for a $550,000 house that needs thousands in renovations and will come with an interest rate in the mid-6% range? I think you're seeing both sides, says real estate agent Brian Quinlan with Real Broker. Sellers are seeing other homes get top dollar, and they believe their homes are worth that. The only ones that don't sit on the market are underpriced, which they are doing to draw in multiple offers. It's a strategy. Buyers are demanding more repairs for their buck. As the day of selling a house for top dollar with a roof a year away from failure, a broken central air system and siding that started to slough off is over. Real estate agent Connie Stowers of Here Realty said, buyers are starting to go and hold sellers accountable, Stowers said. If they haven't maintained a heating system in 12 years, but they still want top dollar, it's now in the buyer's favor to ask for things to be fixed and brought up to code. They're not being forced to say yes to a house that will cost them a significant amount after closing to fix it up. As buyers become pickier with prices so high and supply so low, it's driving up prices in specific pockets of many cities and towns, seen as the most desirable areas for buyers with bigger budgets, Quinlan said. Buyers without flexible budgets have to instead expand their search statewide, heating up the market in other areas off the beaten path and eating the commute time to their jobs for lower prices. Quinlan said some are even looking across the border into Connecticut. Housing has generally had a life cycle. Young families move into a larger single-family home. Then the kids leave and empty nesters sell and downsize, either in-state or retire to warmer climates. When they sell, another young family moves in and the cycle starts over. The problem is that new, smaller, single-family homes or condos aren't being built. Building new is so expensive that developers either skip smaller starter homes and build bigger, more expensive homes, or they need to build with density, which attracts opposition from residents and officials who want to limit growth because of the impact on schools or the perceived increase in traffic. That leaves seniors looking to downsize or people with mobility issues looking for a one-level living, nowhere to move. One of Quinlan's clients is looking to move into a ranch-style home for mobility reasons. The client has been trying to buy for 3 years with no luck. We're not seeing the 55-plus housing to the extent it's needed. I think that that's the biggest pocket of the market that's untapped, he said. They're sitting on the sidelines, sitting on paid-off houses they don't want to be in. The problem is part psychological. While a nice condo in a big building with an elevator is an answer, condos are also perceived as being the cheaper alternative to a single-family home. Why would someone pay $500,000 for a 912-square-foot condo in the Water Place residence or $884,000 for a two-bedroom, 1,547-square-foot version? Or $1.25 million starting price for a 1,400-square-foot two-bedroom condo in a new build on the east side? With condos 2, 3, 4 years ago, you could buy one as a starter home before you buy a house, Stowers said. Now you have to decide if you want a house or a condo because they both cost about the same amount. They are two different lifestyles. In one version, you take care of a lawn, shovel your own snow, deal with all the maintenance yourself. In the other, you do less maintenance but combine the homeowners association fees with the mortgage and the monthly price is the same. Just less work. The total lack of new condos, mostly thanks to community opposition, means for many the easiest option is to build an accessory dwelling unit or build a first floor extension to a house, leaving would-be young families with one less house to move into. How is housing affordability measured? Normally, the conversation about affordability of buying a house revolves around price. Every month, the Rhode Island Association of Realtors comes out with a report on what the median price for a single-family house was in the prior month, as well as the median prices of condos and multifamily houses. Median, rather than average, is used for these prices because it represents the point where there is an equal number of houses below the price and an equal number above the price. Sometimes the conversation moves to the current interest rate. Right now, it's about 6.5%. In the last year, it varied from a high of 6.75% a year ago to a low of 6% in February. For most people, affordability is not captured by either number, but rather by the total monthly cost, which includes private mortgage insurance, property taxes, homeowners association fees, and utilities. During the pandemic, when mortgage rates hit record lows and the real estate headline was houses going for $50,000 to $100,000 over asking, borrowing was cheap. A $600,000 mortgage at 3% cost $2,530 at the time. The same mortgage now costs $3,792. Consider it another way. At 6.5%, that $2,530 a month now buys a mortgage worth $400,000. The official rule of thumb, called housing cost burdened, tracked by the U.S. Census Bureau, puts the maximum amount a household should spend on housing, which includes utilities, insurance, rent, and or mortgage, at 30% of the income. According to federal data, the area median income, or AMI, for a family of two in the state is $89,680. For a family of four, it's $112,100. At those income levels, the maximum mortgage that family could afford at a 6.5% interest rate, a calculation that ignores utility and insurance costs, would be for $90,000 a year, a $2,250,000 mortgage buys $355,000 worth of house. For $112,000 a year, a $2,800 mortgage buys a $445,000 house. In the news with sports, football, Vrabel, Barmore close to return. New England Patriots coach Mike Vrabel spoke to the media on Monday and indicated that defensive tackle Christian Barmore is getting close to returning to the practice field. Barmore is undergoing a load management plan for the preseason. Barmore has dealt with blood clot issues in the past and caused him to miss the entire 2024 season. and he worked his way back for the 2025. Barmore's nearing return is certainly notable given that the team is at its best with him and Milton Williams playing side by side on the defensive line. Barmore started 16 games and recorded 29 tackles and 2 sacks last season. The Patriots face one of the hardest schedules in the league in 2026, and the difficulties start right out of the gate with Super Bowl 60 rematch against the Seattle Seahawks scheduled for week 1. And in baseball, the Red Sox placed designated hitter Masataka Yoshida on the 10-day injured list with a hamstring, and right-hander Justin Slayton an elbow with a 15-day IL on Sunday. Slayton's placement on the IL is retroactive to Thursday. It's corresponding moves, the Red Sox recalled catcher Mickey Gaspar and left-hander Raymond Burgos from AAA Worcester. The Red Sox also sent veteran shortstop Trevor Story on a AAA rehab assignment. The 33-year-old, who started at shortstop on Sunday, is coming back from a sports hernia injury that hampered him for 41 games before he went on the IL. Yoshida was injured while running to second base on a double in Boston's 4-0 victory over the Pirates on Saturday night. The veteran DH told reporters after the game that when he injured his hamstring while playing in Japan, that he missed about a month. In his fourth season with Boston, Yoshida is hitting .274 with 5 home runs and 28 ribbies in 87 games. This has been Nancy reading to you today from your Providence Journal. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for being here with me.